7 o'clock.
Sorry, there appears to be some sort of bald convention going on. That's a varying degree. No, don't look round, mate, because I thought you'd looked in the mirror at some point.
Who are those bald people? I was a runaway, like.
Oh, dear, gratuitous insulting of the audience. Hello, what?
What?
Where? Shut up.
See what you're wearing. That is absolutely fantastic. So, sixth former from hell.
Chris Wardle gone terribly wrong. All right, what was that?
Do you feel fortunate?
Do I feel fortunate? More fortunate than you sitting next to the sixth former from hell, probably.
Picture this. Recording studios somewhere far, far away.
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time to watch.
The Merry White House. Oh, dear, I've done it in the wrong gap.
We thought as it was the 45th show, we'd let him have a go at it.
You told me it was twice.
The Merry White House Experience.
And now, the Has John Major Got a Moustache or What Experience.
First question is, has John Major got a moustache or what? I mean, something's wrong if he hasn't, because clearly God intended him to have a moustache. It's like there's a moustache in there, somehow trying to burst out. An inside-out Fu Manchu moustache.
But what is it? It seems to be some sort of skin moustache, right? It's like what you might expect to see if you've just been staring at a moustache-shaped light bulb and then immediately looked at his face.
Maybe.
You should sort it out, because no other post-war prime minister has had a moustache, apart from Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. John Major has said that he's going to do away with the upper class, but all he seems to have really done away with is the upper lip. He has the widest expanse of skin between his upper lip and nostrils than anyone else in the world.
In fact, in Madonna's recent lip implant operation, I don't know if you've seen that, she's a lip implant operation, John Major is believed to have been the donor. A suggestion supported by this unreleased early recording of Justify My Love.
What is needing, waiting for you, justify
the hard EQ.
Right, at last, the winter experience. When winter comes, weather forecasters are the bringers of the bad news, and sometimes, quite honestly, you get the impression that they really quite enjoy it.
Well, let's have a look at tomorrow's chart. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Oh, dear, especially in the north. Oh, dear, you're really going to suffer. Temperatures? Well, brass monkeys are going to be singing soprano, that's all I can say. Gosh, these studio lights are nice and warm. Oh, by the way, what's the difference between a frozen pensioner and a frozen turkey? The turkey gets the thaw out.
People always blame weather forecasters for not warning them about snow, but as we saw last week, when they do warn them about snow, everyone just ignores it anyway. Perhaps the weather forecasters need to be more forceful.
Hello. Well, tomorrow it's going to snow. Okay? It's going to snow. S-N-O-W, snow. Cold white stuff all over the place. It's going to snow. There's going to be so much f***ing snow, you won't know what's hit you. It's going to puke down with snow.
Thank you, Suzanne Charlton. Whenever we get a really cold spell, three things happen. One, all the newspapers print the headline, it's snow joke. Or even worse, it's Britain. Two, when they open their front door, people say, I'm going out now, I may be gone for some time. And three, scientists start speculating about whether or not it might be the start of a new ice age. There are many reasons why it would be really bad if we did ever go into a new ice age. For a start, the pools panel would have to sit every weekend for 10,000 years.
How did the pools panel work out what the results of the cancelled matches would have been? And why do they take so long doing it? The answer we've discovered is that the pools panel actually have to play all the cancelled games as Sabutio.
Some more results coming in on the teleprinter. Tottenham Hotspur 2, Arsenal 1. That result despite Paul Gascoigne having his head snapped off when he fell off the table and got trodden on by the cat. And here's an unexpected result. Crystal Palace 478, Everton 0. Everton's flicker went off to watch Catchphrase soon after kickoff. No, I'm sorry, that was a real result. Do beg your pardon.
Now, you always know when winter really strikes, when the snows fall, the winds howl, and the thermometer drops into the red. You always know because that's when someone decides that it's time to go and climb Snowdon. Or go fell walking. Who are these people, year after year? Earlier today, teams of rescuers combed the North Wales area for a lone climber who set out in a driving blizzard to reach the summit of Snowdon. A spokesman for the Mountain Rescue Services said, we can't be bothered rescuing this cretin, quite frankly. The search was called off when it turned out to be Challenge Annika trying to get their ratings up.
One good thing about winter is the Winter Olympics, which are good because they're one of the few sporting events where Britain has an excuse to be bad. In fact, we're so bad, we're brilliant, as was proved by Eddie the Eagle Edwards, who for a fortnight in 1988 was the most famous person in the country for being to ski jumping what Major Galbraith is to race relations. In fact, considering the sort of practice you can get in this country, it's surprising that we've got any winter sportsmen at all.
So, in this men's two-man bobsleigh tournament, it's Austria 1, Canada 2, and the Swiss pair, Krondorf van Houtman, in third place with 1 minute, 34.7 seconds. And now the British pair come to the starting gate. Chris Robson on an old tin tray, he got out of the loft. And Brian Simpson lying on an old fertiliser bag that isn't quite empty. And now, wait, down the straight, and as they're going for that double bend, their speed will be approaching 3 miles an hour. They're through the chicane into Dead Man's Bend, a 45-degree corner, which the other British pair, the posh kids with the proper sledge, negotiated with no trouble. And as they come to the line, Brian wants to go to a much steeper slope to impress some girls, while Chris has seriously injured his leg, but he's trying not to show it.
Another winter nightmare is your pipes freezing up or bursting and having to call a plumber. During a cold snap, plumbers are in demand more than any other service. They quadruple their prices and they become very aware of their sudden importance.
Afternoon, Mrs. Simpkin. I've come to re-grommet your U-bend. No photos, please. All interviews through my agent.
The first thing about plumbers is that they assume that no one else knows anything at all. They walk into a kitchen that's knee-deep in ice-cold water and say,
ah, your kitchen's flooded.
And you say, yes, the pipe under the sink has burst. Half an hour later, they say,
I found a problem. The pipe under the sink has burst.
So then you shoot him. And half an hour later, he says,
I found the problem. I've got a large hole in my stomach.
Finally, of course, we must not forget the two worst British winters in living memory. Mike and Bernie. Thank you.
As you may know, listeners, this week is Frank Sinatra's 75th birthday. So, Old Blue Eyes is old.
Fly me up the stairs in one of those Ronco stair lifts. Start spreading the plastic sheeting. I'm coming to stay. If I can make it up the stairs, I just might not piss in my pants. I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night and shout, nurse!
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you very much, Frank.
One good thing about doing these shows is that you actually get people on the front row, because a lot of gigs you do in clubs, people won't sit on the front because they think they're going to see a comic and they think that they're just going to get humiliated in front of everybody. And usually, and a lot of these people here will bear me out, most comics that do this, is it's because it's a lack of their own original material. And I would never normally do this except that I haven't had a chance to write any material this week. There were some good films on, I had a row with my girlfriend. Anyway, what's your name there?
Chris Finch.
Are you proud of your body?
Yes, I am very much.
Stand up. Yes, really stand up. I'm not messing. Take your shirt off. Are you serious? Come on, let's have a look at you. Come on. No, I wouldn't do that. You don't really have to write some things, because this is just something that glares at you out of the paper. Take your seats on the plush flush line. There's a report in Modern Railways that the new Eurotunnel techno toilets are going to be coated with Teflon to minimise sticking. I wonder which clever little T-fowl head thought that one up there. Been dry frying some sausages one morning. Yes, that's it, that'll do. And it says here, instead of dumping the stuff online, this has been British Rail's historic practice, Tunnel train loos will be flushed into tanks, then on arrival these tanks will be disgorged into holders, which means Britain will get tanks of the French stuff, while they get tons of ours. A little exchange holiday for crap going on there. Yeah, we've got a load of made in. Let's take them down the old museum. They'll have a lot there. The other thing I wonder is if there is such a... The Santa Claus really does exist somewhere. He's got his head in his hands crying and his wife saying, look, it's about time you find out there's no such things as children. It's going to be there, I don't know.
You get lots of silly myths told you when you were a kid, especially about the body. Things like, if you pull a funny face, it'll stick forever. If you swallow chewing gum, it'll strangle your heart. And if you wear pants in bed, you can't have babies. It's true, actually, that one, if you think about it. I shall be going back to Sheffield, and I'll be going in my grim northern pubs, and very hard pubs, the horrible pubs, where it's quiz night. You get the question sheet. Question one, what the bloody hell are you looking at? It's that sort of place. And you do get a class mix as well. I saw a great scene one night. There's a couple of old locals playing cards or dominoes. Next to them, a couple of sort of student types playing chess. The old local turns to his mate and says, what's the point of that bloody game? Chess. You can see what other ones got. Just working class logic there, you see. I wonder what the flip side will be like in Major's household. Major, I hope he's bought some shares in electricity because he could do with a bit in his speeches, I think, couldn't he? Like, he actually said on radio that it was plug ugly. Can't imagine Thatcher would have never done that. She would have never gone the Walden interview and said, do you know, my face is like a bag of spanners, Brian.
Now, the hostages experience. This week, the hostages flew back, and no doubt it was the one time in their lives that most of them were pleased to hear about bad British weather.
Good afternoon, this is your captain speaking. I'm afraid to say that Britain is in the grip of a typical winter blizzard. This means we're unable to land at Heathrow, and so instead, we'll be returning to Baghdad.
They flew back on a free luxury British Airways jumbo for a champagne reception. Bastards. Yeah, still, I suppose they deserve it after all those gruelling months in that luxury hotel or camping out by the embassy pool. Meanwhile, the British media was on the plane back trying to make it look like the hostages have all had a really bad time. Unfortunately, most of them seem to have been treated rather well.
So, after 3 months, you must be feeling very homesick.
Yes, and I've only been out of Baghdad a couple of hours. Still, I've got a little picture of Saddam Hussein in my wallet.
There are apparently over 100 Britons who have decided that they want to stay in Kuwait. Why? Are they all amateur video enthusiasts? I've noticed, by the way, that an extended news coverage from Kuwait looks rather like an edition of People Do the Funniest Things.
Since the Iraqis first invaded, there has clearly been a marked increase in the incidence of babies falling down toilets, people pushing cars that then roll away from them, and the men on roofs trying to clear off the thick snow, only to find that, whoops, they've fallen off it themselves in a huge avalanche. This is Gavin Estler for the 9 o'clock news, not realising that behind me a bearded hippie is taking his clothes off.
Saddam Hussein insisted throughout that Britons were not hostages, but guests. Which is fair enough, really. I mean, a hostage is someone who's tied to a radiator and blindfolded. Oh, no, that's a sheep.
One man who was a hostage until very recently was Brian Keenan, who, when he came back, announced that he was going to sleep with all the women in the world. Well, we're now going over live to Dublin to see how he's getting on.
Hello, David. I haven't actually got off with that many people. Do you think I should clean my teeth?
Yes, perhaps you should.
I thought this one bird was going for it, but then she realised I wasn't Shane McGowan. Honestly, I had more chance of a shag when I was tied to a radiator and blindfolded.
Certainly from me. You may have noticed that the plane which took the hostages back was British Airways and not, as had been planned, Iraqi Airways. We understand that this was because there had been some problems with Iraqi Airways. Drink, sir?
Oh, yes, please.
You die!
Thank you. Thank you!
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Oh, I'd say.
Christmas time's the time we think of someone special. She's our grandma, she's our granny, she's our friend. In her comfy chair, interrupt her if you dare. There's granny driving the family round the bend. Most people think that granny's really lovely. How sad that she can hardly climb the stairs. She's like a female Enoch Powell with an irritable bowel. So if I bump the old git off, who cares? While I don't wish to sound too fatalistic, who's gonna notice one more winter time statistic? Oh, ho, ho, grandma, I hope you die this Christmas. Your money in your will. It's uncanny, granny, how happy I would be if at Christmas you were terminally ill. Sing along, everybody. Dee 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 diddly dee. How how best does one dispose of excess wrinkles? Is it best to hire a hitman for a fee? Wait, I know a way to irk her. I'll bring in a social worker. That's the way to get your granny killed for free. At this time of year, we're told to watch the old folks. And so I'm watching Granny even more.
What a lovely boy.
And my job will be complete when I look across the street and see pints of milk piled up outside her door. When I dream of lovely things like hypothermia, I wake up and my sheets could not be spermia. Christmas. How much longer do you plan to stick around? It's uncanny, Granny, how ecstatic I would be if you were rotting somewhere 6 feet underground. Sing along, everybody. Oh, 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 Grandma, I hope you die this Christmas. You've had your knock and now it's time to burn. It's uncanny, Granny, what a Christmas it would be if this year I got a scale electric, a sing-alonger gather album, a Garfield for the Ford Sierra, Mutant Ninja Turtle Slippers, and a granny urn.
What's a granny urn?
Not a lot since the Tories have slashed pensions. We are Ben Elton. Good night.
Okay, now the punchline experience. The punchline this week was not at all self-indulgent. It was, in fact, I think the Mary White's experience should transfer to television because...
I think the Mary White's experience should transfer to television because I don't have a television.
All the deaf people will be able to watch and see how crap it is.
I don't know what you're talking about. You come every week. This is a strange one. I think the Mary White's experience should transfer to television because it already has, in that sense. Yeah.
That's Richard Dean, who'll be doing a
philosophy, I think, later on. I think the Mary White's experience should transfer to television because if it wasn't for you pesky kids, I'd have the run of this old fairground. That's quite funny, but...
Is it from?
Unfortunately, it's from Liz Weekend in Budapest Martini.
Oh, it was her,
all along.
The value of the TV license would have to drop. That's from Tommy the Tortoise and Friends.
I want to see myself on TV, and that's from Keith Chegwin. what a way to fish about for work, Keith, really.
I've got one... I got one here. I'll just remind you, I think the Mary White experience should transfer to television because... Okay, now his answer. There was a bloke who walked into a chip shop and asked for a packet of white sliced. The shopkeeper replied, "Sorry, mate, I've only got brown." To which this bloke replied, "That's okay, my motor scooter's parked outside." And that's from Parvez Graves the Third, who I would very much like to meet. You're there. Oh, hello, Parvez Graves. Oh, how stupid of me to get his name wrong, because of all the Parvez Graves the Thirds I know, that's not... sorry, what are you going to say?
Are you his personal spokesman, or what?
Parvez the Third never talks to anyone, like, except through a... Oh, right.
Except through a Motorhead fan. Nice afro, though, mate. Well done. Yeah. What does Parvez Graves mean?
But is it from anywhere interesting? No. Where do you live?
Kingsbury.
All right. I suppose you'd have to sort of think of some elaborate pseudonym, wouldn't you? I'm from Kingsbury. My brother's a Motorhead fan.
Well, I think it's about time for the end of this now. Yeah. Is there a funny one left?
I am blind, but my television feels nice.
And now, the class experience. Last Tuesday, John Major called for a classless society, a meritocracy that does away with the old bastions of rank and privilege. On Wednesday, he made Dennis Thatcher a baronet. This is a hereditary peerage, which would, of course, go nicely with the hereditary defect.
The award is apparently for Dennis's outstanding social achievement. Well, what was that exactly? Shagging Margaret?
Most people, of course, assume that sex between Margaret and Dennis is non-existent. After all, it's well known that she only sleeps 4 hours a night. But perhaps that's because they're shagging the other six.
Yeah. In fact, that was the real reason the Grand Hotel in Brighton collapsed.
Anyway, class. One of the most complex facts about class identity is that there are lots of middle-class people who pretend to be working class, in the belief that this somehow makes them more vital, more real, and more sexy, like Arthur Mullard. Students and others who put on working-class accents should, however, watch out. Talk like this for long enough, and eventually one of you is going to start striking genuine working-class attitudes. Yeah, well, the trouble with the media image of, like, lesbians and gay men, right, is that it's intrinsically homophobic. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not very good with words, you know.
No, you're so right, Sir John. I mean... The flip side of that hysterical tone has got to be a psyche in panic. Still, I drink Guinness.
Yeah, bleeding puff.
No.
I mean, a man sticks his pot up another man's bottom and you're telling me that's all right? I mean, there's cack up there.
You must admit, though, that the tabloids are to blame.
Yeah, because the Sun has that page 7 fella, hasn't it? I mean, that's not what you want to see over the breakfast table, not unless you got AIDS.
Oh, dear. I knew that false working class accent would eventually take its toll on Ben.
Yes, indeed. And another thing, I'll tell you, I don't let stand behind me as Stephen Fry. No, indeed.
Writers like John Godber and Alan Bleasdale claim to write real working-class theatre representing the working-class experience in all its heroic nobility and unbearable hardship. But, of course, real working-class theatre would actually go like this.
Act 1, Scene 1, The Scene. A classy flat with a big telly. Sony camcorder, Samsung video. Oh, the picture is very good, all plush. Through the plush window, we can just make out the outline of a satellite dish. On the wall is a nice print of a Porsche. Enter a woman. She is classy, although with big boobs too. The outline of her nipples is just visible. She holds up a sign over her head with the number 1 on it. Act 1 begins. Enter Keith and his friend Harvey.
Nice flat, Keith. I see you got a Samsung video. I threw out my Panasonic the other day to get a new Ferguson.
Oh yeah, nice. Oh, that'll be Linda Lusardi. I'm shagging her.
You hear a lot about middle-class pretentiousness and middle-class people going to pretentious restaurants, but so do working-class people.
Hello, have you ever been to Harvester before?
No.
Well, it's a bit like the Burley, only somehow worse.
It is said there are three ways out of being working-class: boxing, show business, or crime. Or in the case of Terry Marsh, all three.
And now, from the Palace Theatre, Watford, we present the last in our series of Mary Whitehouse Experience Christmas pantomimes, Dick Whittington.
Hello, boys and girls, I'm Dick Whittington. I'm a poor country boy and I live in a humble country village. Come with me to the typical local rustic village pub.
And anyway, we bought it for just 95,000 3 years ago. And I mean, like, now it's worth, what, 25,000? And next year we're having to swap it for a Ford Cortina. I mean, it's just ideal for weekends, you know?
And here are all the local inhabitants. Can you recognise their funny accents? That's right. They're all yuppie tossers from London.
Yeah, like, Cressida finds the country, like, so relaxing, which is great because the Labrador is learning the Alexander technique. And, of course, on Monday, it's just 2 hours back to London.
London. That's where everyone goes to make their money. That's where I should go.
And so Dick sets off for London, where the streets are paved with gold. He hasn't gone far, however, when he encounters his first major obstacle, the M25.
Oh no! How on earth do I get to London from this? Wait, perhaps some kind driver will give me a lift. Oh, thank you, kind sir. Can you take me to the centre of London?
Affirmative can-do scenario. Just back from the country, got a few major deals to sew up. Do you mind if I just turn the radio on?
At Westminster today, the atmosphere is electric as we enter the final stages of the voting for the new Lord Mayor of London. The front runners at the moment are Dave, from Chaz and Dave, Dennis Waterman, Leslie Grantham, and Michael Heseltine. This is John Cole for the BBC News in the menswear department of Selfridges.
All day, Dick looks around London and decides that the streets are not paved with gold. Alas, they are mostly paved with people flogging dodgy cassettes or asking you if you've got any loose change. So he goes to leave, first trying one way,
This is the Northern Line Information Service. We regret that this morning there is a fault with the platform indicators. They are showing accurate train arrival time. We apologise for this and any confusion it may cause. Thank you.
Eventually, as he heads out of town...
Dick Whittington, yeah, I got a message for you from Beau Bells. It says, turn again, Whittington, thou shalt be Lord Mayor of London, okay? I've left a post-it on your rucksack.
Lord Mayor of London? But how?
Hello, my son.
Oh, a genuine cockney.
Do what? Leave it out, yours for a fiver, ducking and diving. What's your handle, Guff?
My name's Richard, but people call me Dick for short.
Oh, right, I know, like, Dick the Lionheart. Dick the Third. Cliff Dick. Here, watch out. It's a press gang.
What?
But it's too late. Two press ganging pirates have leapt onto the young innocent from the country to recruit him to their ship.
Ha ha! Splice the main brace. You're coming with us, ain't he, Bolton? On a ship that flies the Jolly Roger.
Yes, sir. I'm actually a little bit worried about the skull and crossbones flag. I think it's open to misinterpretation.
It means pirates ahoy.
Yes, sir, but it also means a ship carrying toxic waste. Other ships never get near enough to us to rob them, while every time we make someone walk the plank, they fall straight into a Greenpeace dinghy.
Pieces of eight! Pieces of eight! Oh, be quiet, Hatfield. It's my parrot, Hatfield. Hatfield Polly. Hatfield Polly. Do you get it? Hatfield is a joke. No, it was a joke.
So Dick is taken away on a pirate ship far away across the seven seas. Oh, Hatfield Polly. Polytechnic, I see, yes. Until suddenly, one afternoon...
Hoist me mizzen spars, bosun! I spy the ship and ready to be boarded. Load the cannon! Powder the muskets! Ignore the United Nations resolution! Aha!
Meanwhile, on the other boat...
the hat is...
pirate ship... Oh, Hatfield Polly, I get it. I think it's Cutthroat Jake. Full speed ahead.
The pirates chase Captain Pugwash until, with a cry of land ahoy, they suddenly find themselves approaching the shore of a far-off desert land.
I don't want to meet James Bloody Baker. Since when did Mike Yowd ever do James Bloody Baker? What do I have to do? I release all the hostages. I promise to shave off my moustache for children in need. And still, they won't send in Mike. Set up the video. I want to watch Carry On Follow That Camel Again. Can you just run by the Hatfield Polly thing by me one more time? You see, the problem I'm having with it is that the Iraqi for Polly is, in fact, a parrot. It's a hahoos. So it'd be Hatfield hahoos. You see, it wouldn't work.
Oh, Mr. Hussein, my name is Dick Whittington, and I'm here with my cat to solve your rat problem.
It's my dog problem I need solving.
Not hard.
My addiction problem. What a rat problem? I have no rat problem.
What? But in the story, the foreign sultan is supposed to have a rat problem, and I sell him my cat, and then I become Lord Mayor of London. It's a sort of parable of imperialist capitalism, except with some crap dancers and a community song.
How can you sell me your cat, your dolt? You would be breaking economic sanctions.
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
Okay, then, I'll buy it.
Farewell, puss.
I'll have it fried with chips. Meat's been hard to get hold of recently.
I'm standing outside the Guild Hall, where the results of the election for Lord Mayor of London are due to be announced any moment, and I believe I'm hearing something through my earpiece as we speak. Yes, yes. Apparently, I've still got the price label sticking out of the collar. Oh, happy Polly!
You've been listening to The Merry Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Mark Hurst, and the Tracy Brothers. The producer was Armando... Oh, God.
Well, although that was the last in the present series of the Merry Whitehouse Experience, there's soon to be a TV series, and tickets for the first recording on Monday the 31st of December are available, free of charge, from the BBC Ticket Unit, Wood Lane, London W12 7SB. Next week at 7 o'clock on Radio 1, highlights of the series just ended.